how to drive consumer behavior change at scale. What's your advice on this?
Bonjour, bonjour, and welcome to one of the best of episodes of Mission First, the podcast to learn from successful entrepreneurs changing the world for the better. In the episode 40 of the podcast, Tessa Clark joined me to share her experience on how to define a new business model, how to fundraise as a female co-founder business. In this small episode today, you will learn how to drive consumer behavior change at scale.
We somewhat naively hoped that we would build this very efficient marketplace solution that could solve this multi-billion pound problem, and everybody would discover our solution and start using it, and we would see this sort of Instagram style hockey stick growth chart. And that fortunately did not happen. And over the years, we have experimented a lot in terms of our messaging and positioning. And I would say that one of the major learnings we've had is that we have flipped on its head the messaging hierarchy for Olio. So in the early days, we had a messaging hierarchy which really reflected our motivation. So we talked a lot about the planet. We then talked a little bit about the people, so the community impact of Olio. And we didn't really talk that much at all about the personal impact. What we have since learned is to flip that messaging hierarchy on the head. And actually, we now lead off our comms with the personal, sort of what's in it for you. So we believe we're living in an age of selfish altruism, which is people want to do the right thing, but there's got to be something in it for them. So we lead off with the personal. And for Olio, the personal is, it just feels really great to share. It feels great to declutter. It feels great not to have to throw stuff in the bin. It feels great to connect with a neighbor. So we lead off with the personal. We then layer on some messaging about the people, so the community angle and the community benefit. And then we just have this sort of magical fairy dust sprinkling of planet communications layered on the top. Because for most people, it is actually fairly intuitive and fairly obvious that what we're doing is good for the planet. So we don't need to really lean on that. So really kind of looking at your messaging hierarchy and leading with the personal and the selfish altruism has been absolutely critical for driving consumer behavior change. The second thing I would say that we have done is we've gone really, really deep on behavioral psychology and learning all of those different tips and tricks that exist that you can use to nudge people to take the behavior that you want. So whether it be about anchoring or commitment bias or any of the other core sort of 10 or 15 behavioral psychology levers, we have experimented with and pulled almost all of them through our communications, our messaging and our language, and also through the product experience as well. So we're always looking at how we can harness behavioral psychology for good, for a positive, powerful impact. And in terms of the models that we have used, the behavior change models that we've used, perhaps the most powerful model we've encountered is the EAST model, which has been developed by the Behavioral Insights team. And the EAST model says that if you want to change consumer behavior, then you need to make change that you're asking people to do. You need to make it easy. You need to make it attractive. You need to make it social. And you need to make it timely. In our experience, and through looking at the sustainability and the climate movement more broadly, I think we've really failed on making climate solutions look attractive. And we've really failed on making them appear social. And it is really, really, really important because through all of the tests that we have run, it seems to us that the biggest determinant as to whether someone will take action or not is if they believe that other people are also taking action. So it's really, really important to, however you can, to reassure people that this is something that lots of other people like you are doing, that this is normal, this is modern mainstream behavior.
Very interesting. And the difficult part is, of course, to have people starting, but that's what you managed to do with your app.
It is, and what you've got to do is not sort of boil the ocean. What you've got to do to get people starting is you've got to just really, really zoom in on the people, the early adopters. So a book that I'd highly recommend to everybody is the Geoffrey Moore's classic sort of book called Crossing the Chasm. And what you need to do is really, really laser focus on your early adopters. So these are people who are absolutely obsessed by your mission. They're super excited that you exist in the world. And I can remember in the very early days of Olio, you know, as a founder, you just need to tell everybody that you ever meet what you're doing and why. And I could very quickly categorize people into three buckets. So there were the early adopters who, the minute I told them about Olio, their eyes lit up. They were sort of giving me a hug whilst downloading the app over my shoulder. They were just couldn't get enough of it. They were super excited. Then there was another bunch of people who intellectually and philosophically understood what we were doing and why, and they really liked the sound of it. But I could tell they weren't going to do anything anytime soon, but they were supportive. And then there was a third group, sort of the laggards, who no matter how many hours I spoke to them about the climate crisis and how big it is and how real it is and how we all need to take action, nothing that I said could convince them to get with the program. And I quickly learned, you know, as much for efficiencies and sort of my own mental health, to just forget about the laggards. Stop trying to convince those folks. And indeed, don't spend any time on the people who are supportive from the sidelines. The only people you need to focus on in the early days are the obsessives, the early adopters. And they are people who will do wildly irrational things to support you. So for example, when Olio was only available for in 5 postcodes in North London, we had people who were so supportive of what we were doing that they would travel from South London to North London via the tube to pick up surplus food to be able to participate. And they played a really, really important role in terms of providing a great experience to those people in North London who had taken that leap of faith and added an item of food to the Olio app from their home. So you really, really have to obsess about the early adopters. And if you haven't got those obsessive early adopters, then you will really, really struggle to get your business to scale. I often encounter founders who have this beautiful vision of the world. You know, when everybody does this, the world will be wonderful. And that is absolutely true. But the problem is that no one cares enough to take those early steps to support you on the journey when your product is really crappy and the user experience isn't very good. And I realize, and I have this sort of mental model in my head that I call stepping stones of forgiveness. And by that, I mean, you focus on those early adopters who are very, very forgiving. They start using your product. They get you, give you feedback. You improve your product as time elapses. And then the next group of users come along who are less forgiving than the first lot, but infinitely more forgiving than the next lot. They use your product, give you user feedback, time elapses. Then the next group come along, less forgiving than all the lot that have been before them, more forgiving than everyone else. And you just have to slowly sort of work your way up these stepping stones of forgiveness. And you need to zone out all the noise from the naysayers and the laggards and the people who you're just not focusing on at that point in time. And that is how you build up to scale.
Do you have any advice on where to find these early adopters? At the beginning.
For us, we were extremely manual in terms of how we did that. So we knew that we needed to identify the early adopters within London. We chose very carefully those six postcodes or 5 postcodes. I'm losing track now. 5 or 6 postcodes that we first launched Olio in. So it was in North London, so Crouch End, Finsbury Park, that sort of area. And we just knew from our knowledge of London that the type of people who lived there were more interested in sustainability. They were more interested in community. It was just a natural and sensible place to start. And then within that, when we were handing out the free food on the weekend, encouraging people to sign up to be the first to know about the food sharing app, we spoke to thousands of people. And through that process, we learned very, very quickly the people who were in that first camp, the super passionate people. And we learned that if someone was female, they were more likely to be really excited about what we're doing than male. We learned that if they cycled everywhere, they were probably more into Olio than if they didn't. If they were vegan or vegetarian, they were probably more into it. If they were a certain age range. And so through doing that very, very manual process of just talking to people on the street corners, we were able to narrow down and understand what our early adopter looked like. That then meant that we could then share and promote about Olio in lots of vegan and vegetarian Facebook groups and in local community groups in North and East London. That was really how we sort of cracked that one.
Yeah, so I think it's very important to always start manually and reach out to people directly, because that's a mistake. A lot of founders go only digital in that case and skip that step. And this is where you learn. It's manual work that doesn't scale, but that's the one that makes it reach a product market fit quickly.
Correct. And it's very counterintuitive for a lot of founders, because you're dreaming and fantasizing about millions or hundreds of millions of people using your product. And so you think about scale, scale, scale. But in the early days, you need to forget about scale. You need to do as much stuff manually as you possibly can. And that often involves you kind of getting out from behind your desk, and it involves you talking to real human beings, which can be a really uncomfortable experience for many of us, but it's something that you have to do as an early stage founder. And I really recommend the book The Mom Test by Rob Fitzpatrick. It's a very short read, but a really powerful one, which teaches you how to interact with prospective customers in a way that is not biased and leading.
Listen to the full episode to learn how they used WhatsApp to run a proof of concept, how to solve the cold start problem of a marketplace and this chicken and egg problem, the three tips from Tessa for setting up a marketplace, why you should monetize your product at a later stage, and how to fundraise as a female co-founder. Go to the episode 40 or follow the link in the description for the full episode with Tessa.